With so many award shows and trophies handed out, you always wonder if they mean anything to an artist. But when Billboard names one of your albums on the greatest of all-time country albums list, you know it means something. And the Kentucky Headhunters got that designation. We've got Doug Phelps from the group on the line. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Jeremy. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Man, doing great. Doing great.
Good. Well, I would imagine. Congratulations on the honor. That's pretty huge.
Well, thank you, man. It was a surprise to us when someone actually forwarded the piece that was posted. And I think Greg said it best when he kind of responded to it and said, you know, honored and humbled to be included in that top 100 list. It was a pleasant surprise, to say the least.
I guess it always kind of makes you wonder when people get, you know, like a lifetime achievement or that sort of a milestone recognition. It's kind of like, well, you know what, we're not done yet. We're still going. We're still going, right?
That's right. We're not done yet. That's for sure. In fact, this year has been a very busy year for us. But, you know, a recognition like that is certainly an honor. And I guess it provides a little bit of extra inspiration for us to keep on keeping on. We've been busy touring, and in between that, we actually have recorded a new record that'll be out in November. And we did a first. It's never too late to do something, to have a first experience in your life. Even at our age, we toured overseas for the first time ever in our 30-year career. So that was exciting for us as well.
Well, let's cover all of those things then. We'll talk about the new album in just a bit. But you just finished, it was over in the UK, right, the tour?
Well, yes, we did about a month and a half ago. Our first ever trip across the ocean was to Sweden. We played a huge rock festival over there called Sweden Rock. And had a great time, didn't know what to expect, but the people were great, very gracious to us. Got in there and had a great time with us. It was a wonderful experience for us. And about 2 or 3 weeks after that, we made a trip overseas to the UK. And, we started out with 3 shows out of 4 days up in Canada, hopped on a plane, middle part of Canada, flew to Toronto, hopped on another plane, flew to London, and started an 8-day a tour over there, 8 shows in a row. And which is pretty, it's hard on us old farts, let's just put it that way. But you know what, the crowds were wonderful, great response to our music. And we've had opportunities to go in the past, but our rhythm guitar player and the guy that sings a bit in the band now these days is Richard, and he had a legitimate fear of flying. He hated to fly. And so it never worked out. In 91, Dire Straits wanted us to open up stadium dates for them. We would have been over, I think, 3 or 4 different weekends. And the Gulf War broke out, and the tour got postponed and everything. We had Richard was going to take a boat over, and we were going to fly over. So we had it worked out, but unfortunately, we didn't get to go at that time. And when the tour it was time to do it again, we already had too many dates booked and couldn't get out of it. So missed that opportunity. The other few opportunities come along, but the main driving force, I think, that finally got Richard to say, you know what, it's time to do this, is his son's band, Blackstone Cherry, is huge overseas. They've done so well over there, and they get asked a lot of questions about the Headhunters, and we both came through the old practice house on the farm, two Kentucky bands out of the same spot, basically, out there in Kentucky. So they kind of got tired of saying, you know, yeah, we want to get them over, we're going to get them over. And they cornered Richard last fall and said, all right, the jig is up, it's put up or shut up, it's time to make a commitment to get over there, because there's a lot of interest, and they just thought that it would be good for our career as well. So he finally bit the bullet, so to speak, and figured out how he was going to make this happen, and he did great. He did great on all the flights over, and like I said, it was a great experience, and
You almost could have just said, you know what, we'll get you a canoe and we'll meet you there.
Well, I kept telling him, of course, you know, everybody said, well, the Mr. T thing, just, knock him out and go. But I kept telling him, I said, I'll sit by you, and every time you wake up, I'll just knock you in the head, and you won't even know you're on a plane. But, man, it was a determination factor that wanting to see, John Fred and Chris and Ben and John, the bass player, wanting to see, the hard work they put in and the success they've had overseas, not thinking that he might not ever get to see that firsthand. So I know that that was a driving force as well. And one of the shows that we played over there, another huge festival called Ramblin' Man Festival, they headlined the particular night that we played. We played early in the afternoon, of course, but they came out and hung out on stage with us and then brought us out on their set, and that was just their way of kind of introducing us to their audience as well. And just had a great time. The whole thing was a great experience. And so he's figured out that he can do it, and sky's the limit now. We'll definitely be back over.
Well, next is the world tour now then, right?
Yes, we can actually attach that to the Kentucky Headhunters World Tour.
There you go. So I've got to ask that I've heard audiences in different parts of the world react differently to music. Like, have you found that now then, that you've expanded your horizons?
Well, no doubt about it. The, our bread and butter's always been here in the States, and we have great fans and loyal fans. We've been doing Headhunters have been together 30 years, and they've hung in there with us. And we continue to make new records. About every 2 years or so, we'll put out a new album. And, it might not be top of the charts like it was in the beginning, but we have our following, and we appreciate. I think the older we get, the longer we survive in this business, the greater appreciation we have, for the fans and for what it is that we do. So we certainly love what we do. And it always comes back down to, it's about the music first and all the business stuff. If you do that right, all the business stuff follows. And that's just how we approach it.
Have you seen that the music industry has changed, though? You're talking about it's the love of music that's sort of what keeps you going. Now it's just so commercialized, and it's kind of like, let's just put out a big hit and then hope to make a lot of money on it. I think maybe that's what leads to longevity, though, when you actually do care about the music and you put your heart and soul into it.
Well, I think so. I think that comes across. I know there is, I guess some people would call it maybe disposable music. But of course, I mean, a hit's a hit. If people like it and they go out and buy it, then, you can't really, I don't have anything negative or bad to say about any of that. That's, if the people choose to go out and buy it, then it was a success. But what we do is, We kind of do the opposite of that. Now, we've had songs that were, I guess, hits and picking on Nashville, like the Barn Road, those albums sold a lot of records as well. But it was more of an album process. I guess we're old school in that respect. We made albums and didn't really worry about singles. And but we were fortunate enough that we had some singles that did well. But it's always been about the whole album. And back in the day, when we released Picking on Nashville, if you got three singles off an album, you were really doing good. Picking on Nashville, to me, even though it was a full album process, I think every song on that record, could have been a legitimate release as a single. But that's not what labels did at that time. But shortly thereafter, Shania Twain, who was on the same label, who got signed to our same label a couple year or two after us, they ended up on seven singles off of that, I think, her second record. And they kind of realized, hey, if it's legitimate and people are going to dig it, then just keep on rolling with it. So, and that's one of the reasons why I guess Picking on Nashville was included in this top 100 list. It's that it stayed on the Billboard charts, album charts. I think it was number two for 48 weeks or something. It just kept hanging in there and kept hanging in there, and people were buying the record and playing the videos, and we did get definitely got a lot of airplay out of not only just the singles, but people were playing, you know, on deep into the album cuts as well. So it definitely, you know, that was a different model, business model back then. The music industry always was through these hills and valleys, I guess, and it's kind of back to, it is kind of back to the more single oriented, which was, that was kind of like the 50s, wasn't it? You know, put out a single, and if it does well, then maybe we'll put out a record. You know, maybe we'll put out an album.
Right. And I mean, now with technology, yes, you know, listeners do have the chance to pick up one song here and there. And that brings us to the whole, like, internet and technology age. And I always love asking, you know, an artist or a group that's had decades of success in the music industry, obviously it's changed over the years. Do you find the internet threatening, like, from your own personal experience or opinion? What do you think about how social media and the internet has changed the music industry?
Well, I think that it has provided certainly more opportunities. You know, more doors can be opened via the technology. You don't have to have a record deal to get exposure, and that's been proven time and time again. Of course, that exposure usually does lead to a major record deal, but you know, there's YouTube videos out there that's got millions of views, and you know, no record deal yet, but I'm sure it's coming. But then, you know, the other side of it, I guess, from the artist's perspective is, you know, how does it get paid? You know, the whole pay process is different than it used to be. And you know, we love sharing music as well. But I guess it's kind of some positives and maybe some negatives, too. It's sort of both. It's not just one or the other. But I think overall it's really... You know, I think it's a good thing. I really think it's provided more opportunities.
What piece of advice would you give? Like, maybe somebody who's just starting out in music now and wants to make a name for themselves, or even just have decades of success. What would you suggest? What steps should they take?
Well, it really comes down to, I know this is not necessarily specific business advice, but it comes down to having a passion and a love for what you're doing. You know, having love for music and having an appreciation for the music that came before you and those artists that you know, poured their hearts and souls into their music. You know, one of the things we did that helped us a lot in the very beginning was, you know, we were into a lot of bands. You know, as we grew up, it was the Beatles and the Stones, Zeppelin, and Creedence and ZZ Top, and you know, just a lot of different bands. That was kind of mainly our main influence, let's just put it that way. As opposed to us starting the writing that we started when we started writing original material, as opposed to starting there from those influences, we wanted to go back further and dig deeper and find out what made the Beatles. You know, who did they listen to? Who influenced them and made them who they were? You know, who influenced Led Zeppelin and made them who they were? So we dug deep, and before we even started writing, and you know, discovered that, you know, really a lot of it came from blues, Muddy Waters, Sonny Boy Williamson, Jimmy Reed, Howlin' Wolf, Robert Johnson, of course. Those roots was incorporated into whatever, I guess, the current music of the day was when those bands formed. And so that we went all the way back and learned a lot of those early blues songs to make that our foundation before we started. Now we all grew up rural on Richard and Fred are still on their farm in South Central Kentucky. I'm no one not from Kentucky. I grew up in Southeast Missouri, but that's all a part of the Delta region over there, and it's a lot of cotton and soybeans, and it's farmland, and so that's what I did growing up, was work on the farm. So we are country people, there's no doubt about that. You know, we had a rural experience growing up, and so that part of our writing, I think, is probably the biggest connection we have to country music is our stories and what we, you know, we wrote about the things growing up, that kind of thing. But our music is blues based, but going back and getting that foundation first. And so I know I kind of maybe I talked too long about it. And it's easy just to say, find out what you're influenced by, dig deep, and find out what made them who they were musically. And I just think that gives you a firm foundation to you know, start doing what you're going to do.
Absolutely. And so when you have those years of success, you come out with new music. I know you mentioned about a new album. It's coming out in November then, right?
Yes. We actually, these tunes were songs that we had started writing 2 years ago. And we were about to go into the studio when we got the call from, you know, we did the project with Johnny Johnson. Mm-hmm. Well, the album was released last year, called Meet Me in Bluesland. We did a blues project with Johnny Johnson, which was Chuck Berry's original piano player. We recorded that project in 2003. We had him coming in just to play on one song on an album we were recording at that time called Soul. And his wife mentioned the fact that Johnny's health was not very good. He was starting to have some health issues. And so she suggested we keep him up there a couple of days, write some, you know, new original songs and record them, and at least we'd have them. And sure enough, about a little over a year later, from those sessions, Johnny did pass away. So we have basically one of the last projects he probably ever recorded on. But this is 2003. We just set it under the bed and basically was waiting for the right time to put it out. Well, year after year goes by, we finally get a phone call from Frances, his widow, in 2014, and she said, "Hey, I know it's been a while, and you know, I think it's time, let's do something with that project." And so we were writing the album that we've just finished. That's what we were working on at that time, and so we set that aside and got Johnny in the studio, and you know, 3 days later we had written and we produced and recorded the album that came out last year, Meet Me in Bluesland. So this new project, after the Johnny record that we'd worked it, we're still promoting it, obviously, and it has done well overseas as well. But we knew it was time to get in there and get something, get this new material recorded. So looking at a release date, I think November 4th, if the schedule, you know, stays put like it's supposed to. So but we are definitely looking at a November release date on the new project. And it's sort of a return to our, I think some people will, it's a variety like we always do, but we've got some more, I guess, Southern Rock type sounding tunes on there as well. People will definitely recognize it's a hit number, that's for sure.
Well, so I guess all of the information about the album and then even your upcoming shows and news, it's all on your website then too, right? So people can keep informed there.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be definitely posting more and more information as we get closer. And of course, there'll be a lot more promotions going on as well about the new record. So yeah, just people can go to our Facebook page or just KentuckyHeadHunters.com, our website, and you know, see the tour dates and see what's going on with the Headhunters.
Well, we'll be sure to check it out. And again, you know what? Congratulations on the honor. You know, a Billboard recognition like that is huge. So again, congratulations to the group and to you, Tug, as well.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. We certainly appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Watch for that new album in November and KentuckyHeadHunters.com for all the latest on the group. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.